Measuring visual acuity is such a routine optometric test that we often take it for granted. Although we might think of it as an essentially objective test, it's actually more subjective than many of us realize, making it hard to achieve reliable and consistent results. Although most community optometrists continue to use the standard Snellen chart, LOGMAR and high and low contrast charts have emerged as alternatives, particularly in hospital practice. For those less familiar with these methods, the differences in notation can make it difficult to put the results into context and to make useful clinical comparisons. Dan Rosser is principal optometrist and head of the optometry department at the Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital. Here, with David Cartwright, he discusses different methods of measuring visual acuity, including the appropriate uses and associated difficulties of each.
Dan, optometrists measure visual acuity on a daily basis on every patient. Can you remind us what the measurement tells us and why actually we're doing it?
Yes, I guess it's something that we do sort of automatically on everybody, and know we need to do it for medical, legal reasons and all sorts of things. So perhaps we don't think about it as much as we should. It's a measure of the spatial resolving capacity of the visual system. So in other words, the level of detail that the visual system can make out. And our ability to see detail is maximum at high contrast. So it tends to be a high contrast measurement. So we can use that for various purposes. Obviously, day to day, it's used a lot for refraction purposes, but we also use it to measure vision, to reference it against our idea of what's normal and what's not, to help us detect an abnormality. And we can also then use it to monitor somebody's condition over time, either to see if their condition's getting worse, or also to monitor them if they've undergone some sort of treatment to see if their vision has improved. But it's probably worth remembering that it's quite a complex task, really. We think of reading a visual acuity chart as being quite simple, but as well as our optical system having to produce an image of whatever we're looking at on the retina, then that has to be processed by the retina and the other elements of the visual system to produce some sort of perception. And then the brain has to compare that with a previous knowledge of what target, what stimulus the eye might be seeing, and then sort of verbalize a result at the end of all of that. So it feels simple, but in some respects it's quite a complex task. Mm.
You mentioned there that when we measure visual acuity, we're looking for changes to monitor conditions, as an example, and monitor progress in whether somebody is becoming perhaps more or less short-sighted. Does a change in visual acuity with measurement, though, always mean there's been a clinical change?
Well, no, and for me, this is an important part of thinking about visual acuity and something that we've done a bit of work on in the past. So essentially all of these sort of measurements are subject to what can be called measurement error or test retest variability, such that if you repeat the measurement on a given person, even over a short space of time, where clearly there hasn't been any clinical change over a half hour period, you'll get something slightly different. And this is important, obviously, because we need to distinguish that measurement error that's present in the system in the absence of any clinical change from a change in visual acuity that really does reflect an underlying change in the patient's condition. So yeah, it's an important point, actually.
So when we're testing visual acuity as optometrists, what factors should we consider that may affect the result that we're getting?
Well, I think the key thing here is that we've got to remember that we're using typically the size of a letter target to describe the patient's vision. So obviously the smaller the target that they can resolve and recognise, then the better their vision. So if we're using letter size within some form of notation to try and specify their vision, then anything else that would affect their ability to see or make out that letter, apart from its size, should be kept constant. So, for example, there are some obvious ones, and the patient needs to be viewing the visual acuity test from the same distance, and it needs to have the same illumination and that sort of thing, and they need to have the same refractive correction in front of their eyes both times if it's being measured twice with an interval of time in between. But also there are factors that are sometimes not quite so obvious to do with how the chart and the test are designed themselves, such as the difficulty of letters. There's been quite a bit of research done on that sort of thing. Near threshold, some letters are more difficult to make out than others. For example, near threshold, a T is rather easier to make out than an A. And so the chart really needs to be standardized such that the total difficulty of each line on the chart is similar. There'll be a few slightly harder letters and a few slightly easier letters. So comparing one line with another, the only real difference between them is going to be the size of letter. Another issue is the scaling of the chart. The size interval between letters should be consistent across the chart. And there are other factors like the numbers of letters per line and the spatial gap between the letters on each line are all things that, if they're varied, might introduce an extra variable and influence the result. And one other thing, we need to be quite careful about how we instruct the patient and when we decide to finish the measurement, when we're taking a visual acuity measurement. It's quite easy sometimes to see that the patient managed a certain level of vision at their last visit and allow them to read down to that same point on the chart and perhaps not encourage them to go further, in which case we'll record a slightly poorer level of vision than they otherwise might have had. Whereas alternatively, on a different occasion, the patient might be struggling and you might encourage them. So again, there's been some research carried out to show that to have a specific termination rule, as it's often called, a specific point on the chart where you say, right, once you've got so many mistakes on a given row, then we're going to stop the measurement there. It's quite important to have that consistent each time you take the measurement as well.
So with all those things in mind, I think it would be fair to say that the majority of optometrists use a Snellen chart, which we'll all be familiar with. Mm-hmm. How good is the Snellen chart at addressing those issues that you've just outlined to get a good clinical result?
Well, unfortunately for the Snellen chart, it's quite a good example of how not to address most of those issues, because it suffers from issues in all those respects, really. The letter difficulty isn't very well controlled. The scale interval across the chart is quite variable. For example, if you go from the 6-6 line to the 6-9, there's a 50% jump in letter size, whereas if you go from the 6-9 to 6-12, there's a 30% jump. So it's a little bit like having a ruler, and yet the Snellen ruler has the notches different distances apart, which unfortunately means that although we like to say, oh, the patient lost two lines of vision or gained one line of vision, on the Snellen chart it's completely meaningless because the size of a line of vision varies across the chart. So also from a spacing point of view, I said earlier that we know that a visual acuity stimulus can be more difficult to make out if it has other letters or contours around it, and easier to make out if there's more space around it. And the Snellen chart doesn't really allow for that. At the bottom of the chart, there are gaps between the lines, for example, and gaps between the letters, which are much bigger than a letter's width or a line's height, whereas at the top of the chart, the gaps relatively are much narrower. So there are quite a few things with the Snellen chart in this respect that aren't very well controlled for. Mm.
So, what other systems should an optometrist think about using to measure visual acuity?
Well, there's certainly been other alternatives around for quite a long time, actually. I mean, interestingly, although Snellen introduced his original chart in 1862, it was within sort of 6 years or so of that an American ophthalmologist by the name of Green pointed out pretty much all the points that I've just mentioned and designed a new chart to correct them all. And unfortunately, his work was pretty much completely ignored, unfortunately, and we know how well Snellen's done since. But obviously, in more recent years, and particularly with the increasing interest in visual rehabilitation, the LogMAR charts that everyone will be reasonably familiar with now have been designed and have addressed a lot of these issues, really. So certainly the letter difficulty, the task at each size, the number of letters per line, the spacing of the chart, all of these things are addressed by both the initial Bailey-Lovey LogMAR chart and the ETDRS version that followed. We've also got, as I'm sure many optometrists use in their practice, computerised versions of that as well, such as the Test Chart 2000 system produced by David Thompson. And a few other systems as well. And these are quite nice from a day-to-day point of view in terms of having the flexibility to put up on the screen a well-designed set of visual acuity stimuli, but also all the other things we need to do as well to assess possibly contrast sensitivity and a patient's sort of binocular function and that sort of thing as well. From a children's vision point of view, there are other tests which are available, and I'd refer anybody listening to this to Catherine Saunders' summary of this, which she wrote in Optometry in Practice in about 2010 for a really nice overview of them. But essentially these days, children's visual acuity measurement is often carried out with sort of grating preferential looking cards in the early years, following through these days to, again, targets which are suitable for children but designed with the principles of the LogMAR charts and crowding involved, moving on obviously to the ideally LogMAR charts as soon as they can cope with them a little bit later in life.
So would you have advice for optometrists on perhaps just one chart they should use, or would you suggest that they would have a suite of charts that is available to them?
I think essentially it's important, if you can, to be using the same chart, again, just for consistency, really. So I've already said that there are certain advantages to having the sort of the LogMAR approach to things, and I think to use that on any individual that's capable of doing it would be preferable. You're then measuring that person's vision on the same system each time, and again, hopefully that'll help mean that any change in the measurement will reflect a change in the person's condition rather than one of these extraneous variables we were talking about earlier.
So you've outlined there very well the advantages and disadvantages and contrasted LogMAR versus Snellen charts. The notation, I understand, is different in the two systems. Could you explain that for us?
Yes, so we're very used as optometrists obviously to dealing with Snellen notation, but it's probably worth spending a moment just recapping on what it actually means. So essentially the idea is based around a sort of notion of normal vision, which is the 6-6 line. And obviously in Snellen notation, the numerator, the top number of the two, tells us the viewing distance, which I guess is an additional advantage of the notation. But the general idea is it's based around this idea of normal. So the 6-6 letter is a letter whereby the whole letter will subtend 5 minutes of arc at the eye. And then if we contrast that with a 6-12 letter, then a 6-12 letter is a size whereby at 12 metre viewing distance rather than 6, that letter will again subtend 5 minutes of arc at the eye. So it's a notation we're very familiar with. The LogMAR notation, by contrast, obviously we're very unfamiliar with, but was developed to be the way it is for good reason. The notation really sort of hinges around this fact that we've touched on earlier about the fact that we are seeking to have a regular progression of letter sizes from top to bottom. And the ETDRS and Bailey-Levy LogMAR charts are designed such that there's a 0.1 LogMAR interval between each row, and that means that each row is 26% larger than the one below. It still relates to this minimum angle of resolution that we mentioned earlier in relation to the Snellen chart, but it's the logarithm of that minimum angle of resolution. One of the potential disadvantages as well of the ETDRS chart is that the way the chart is set up, the 6-6 Snellen equates to zero, and therefore any visual acuity measurements which are better than that will be in minus figures, whereas those which are worse will be positive, which perhaps takes a little bit of getting used to.
And I believe in the LogMAR notation, we can take into account individual letters?
Yes, it's certainly, I mean, potentially you could do this with a Snellen chart as well, but it'd be a very sort of cumbersome process of doing it. First of all, just to say that one of the issues of Snellen with acuity charts in general, really, is that the scale is quite coarse. In other words, the intervals between letter sizes are quite large. And there's been some nice research published to tell us that this means that our ability to detect changes in a patient's visual acuity is not so good. So one thing that can be done with a letter chart is to try and divide up each line so that individual credit is given for each letter that's correctly read on that line. And this has the effect of essentially making the scale much finer. And we know that that this results in a much improved ability to detect changes in visual acuity. Now, obviously, although that in theory might be possible with a Snellen chart, it's a very complex calculation to try and work out an individual scoring for each letter, and it doesn't really fit with the Snellen notation either. But with an ETDRS chart, it's quite simple, or a Bailey-Levy chart, any of the contemporary Logmar designs, it's quite simple to say that we've got a 0.1 log unit interval between each line, and there's five letters on each line. Therefore, each letter read can be given a value of 0.02 logmar. And so immediately the scale can be made finer, which has the advantages in terms of detecting change that I've just mentioned.
There seems to be a split now, perhaps, between hospital and community practice, where in hospital logmars are more commonly used, in community practice Snellens are more commonly used. Can you give any advice on how to equate the two?
Well, yes, certainly that it's quite possible to convert one to the other. I mean, first of all, I'd say for the probably significant number of people out there using a system such as Dave Thompson's Test Chart 2000 system, you can select on a system such as that what notation you're going to have. So, for example, we use that in our clinic here, and we have Snellen on one side of the chart and Logmar on the other. So it'd be quite easy to have access to both. But essentially, it's quite easy to make a mathematical calculation from one to the other. As it so happens, I mentioned earlier, I think that our normal vision, 6 over 6 in Snellen, converts to 0 on a logmar scale, whereas 612 equates to about at 0.3, and a 660 letter equates to 1. So there's a simple mathematical calculation that can be used to convert one to the other, and we'll put that in the references.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Dan and David, thank you both.